But Harwood, real four. So were there any other courses that you went on?
A small arms course at Hyde.
What did that entail?
Everything from, you know, with going on the rifle ranges. That was early on, rifle ranges and, you know, the procedure of using the weapons on the range. Mainly for instructions for other people, really, to do it properly. I don't know, I think it's about a week, you know. But, no, that was the only course, apart from what I mentioned before.
So you're at Walton on the Hill. What happened next? Where did you go after that?
Well, before then, we'd gone to Deal. I believe I mentioned Deal, did I? And we were on we took the people in from Civvy Street, I told you that, from Canterbury, and we trained them there. And then we went to Walton on the Hill, and we were on the sea defences at Deal, as well as training the new entrants. From Walton on the Hill, we went to Liverpool, eventually Liverpool, and we sailed out to by Freetown and Cape Town to the Middle East, Port Tupic.
And what ship did you sail on?
Laconia.
And what was the accommodation like for the men on board?
Pretty tight, yeah, you were sleeping all over the place. We were packed on, although I was fortunate, I was in a cabin. Not with another, because I was a sergeant at the time. But, we had little classes on the deck, you know, cleaning weapons and what's the name, and I should never forget, the CO called a tactical lesson for all the NCOs, and what did I do? I went to sleep on the deck and nearly missed it, but fortunately I got away with it. I arrived late, but I got let off. But no, on the whole, the ship was a little bit, what's that? And once you got a little bit rough weather, and you had to go down onto the deck where all the men were in hammocks on the floor, and if one or two had been, you know, seasick, or anything, it was a little bit of a stench, I can tell you. But we went into Freetown.
Had you sailed in convoy?
Yeah, it was a big convoy outside Liverpool. I forget. Well, I think the Nelson was one of the battleships we had. But it was a big convoy. And we called in at Freetown for a refueling. Then we went on to Cape Town, where we were able to have a couple of days ashore. I was invited out from the... I was in the services club at Cape Town, and a message came over the channel that a family in South Africa would take a few soldiers. They got a party on. If you'd like to go to the station and catch the train two stations up, you'll be met. And we went there, two or three of us went there and had a party, and they took us back to the dock at midnight and saw us on the boat, so that was quite a good little stay at Cape Town. But on the way up to the Middle East, the old Laconia, it developed a little bit of an engine trouble, I think, and we got left on our own. The convoy went on without us, but fortunately we managed to get to Egypt, Port Tupic, without any problem.
When you're on board ship, what were the rations like?
As far as I can remember, they were quite good. I can't remember going out what I'd done as a sergeant, but coming home I'd been promoted. This is perhaps against the line of dance, but coming home, beginning on warrant officer, I was in the officer's mess. So I was okay. But going out, nothing startling, but we managed. And of course, when you get to Port Toofey, everything's unloaded. They can't get in right to the side. It's unloaded into lighters and onto the lorry. And that was the start of our trip into the desert.
What was your first impressions of Egypt?
Bloody hot. Again, being held up through Indian trouble, all the rest of the division, more or less organised, but we, us and others, were a bit late, and we were shoved in one corner. I was never hit, really. We were in tents, and they had a old tin shack as a cookhouse. I can remember now. And of course, the usual thing, they had battalion headquarters guard, and we'd supplied the actual guard for battalion headquarters. And in the guard, some of the men would I train in the 3 months from just before we get a site set sail. And in the morning, the usual thing, all the officers comes along, calls out the guard. Before he dismounts the guard, for inspection, port arms, he couldn't have done his job properly. Because when they ease springs, close the bolt, squeeze the trigger, it should be, everything should be all in order. But there's a round left in the rifle. And it went through the top of our cookhouse, the tin roof, and hit one of my men sleeping in the tent and killed him. And he'd only been in the army about 4 months. Yeah. But, somebody hadn't done their job properly. But I should always remember that, because the bloke who, when I was in, went eventually to Syria through with the scarlet fever, I came back through into a transit camp, and the bloke who fired the rifle was in there. He'd been mentally disturbed through that. So that accident, which shouldn't have happened, caused trouble for two of the men. Yeah.
When you'd arrived, or was it before, had you been issued with your new kit?
We had. Yeah, we must have done. We had the shorts and blazer things, topies we had. I can't remember them old straw bloody topies, which were useless, they didn't last long.
What did you wear in their place?
Steel helmet or we used to have the old forage cap, I think, topies. We were issued with the old Australian bush hat at some time around the world. I can't remember when it was.
Were there any sort of special regulations about how you should behave in the sun then? Because you said it was very hot and you just arrived in the desert.
Not really, because, they always used to say you rest in the midday sun, but not, you're on the go all the time. And I think that's why I've got sand for my fever, because of being out in the sun on that.
What happened at Port Toofey? Did you move from Port Toofey to... Was this camp at Port Toofey?
We were camped just outside Port Toofey. And then we moved up further behind Alamein. And then eventually we moved up to Alamein. And as I say, that's when I got sand fly fever.
How had you made the moves?
By lorry. We didn't march here, it was taken up by lorry.
And was there any incidents that occurred on the journey?
Not really, no, because at that time it was a bit quiet. I mean, they were both building up, if you ready for the big battle. But no, Egypt, all I'm saying, I was there. But regards to the battle and that, I know very little about it.
So how did you contract Samphire fever?
I think there was a few, even at Port Tufik, I think one or two went down with Samphire fever. But I don't know, it was just a matter of, I travelled up on the lorries and felt unwell. And I did feel unwell too.
What were the symptoms?
Well, you really didn't care, delirious, you know, you didn't really want to know what's, it was, didn't care. You were really delirious, you didn't know what was going on or anything. But I was taken back from there by ambulance to, I forget the name, but it's just outside Cairo. There's a tented hospital there, which was very well organised. And they had the British nurses and all that there, and was looked after quite well. And so I got over the Samphire fever. I don't know how long it took. Must have been a couple of weeks, I should think.
Did they give you any medication for it?
Well, I must have done. Even when, as I said, I went to this local cinema in the evening with my next to me was the bloke in the next bed, and in the morning, they found that I'd got scarlet fever, and then the bloke in the next bed came into the isolation ward afterwards, and then the two of us, we were then transferred by hospital boat from Cairo up to Syria.
So you contracted the scarlet fever while you were in the hospital?
Well, it's either hospital or this open air cinema. It was right rain, and funny enough, I didn't really feel ill that morning when we came back from the cinema, and the nurses done their usual checks in the morning, taking the temperature and that. I mean, I never felt ill, no different than what I was the day before. And then they said, I've got scarlet fever, and we went on the hospital, and the biggest thing was nobody would come near you. You were put in the tent on your own, you had a job to get anything to read, because everything had to be destroyed afterwards. And it was a little bit, you know, you were really on your own. I peeled from head to foot, and yet I never really felt ill as such. But when I was in Syria, up in the number two, I think, of British King Hospital, up in the hills there, it was funny because, as I said, I peeled. And for two or three days, they used to take the temperature in the morning. It wouldn't go down. I'd have a temperature in the morning. And they couldn't make out what it was. And they said, well, we'll give you another day, and we'll, if not, we'll have to make further, have a look into it further. Fortunately for me, the next morning, I had a normal temperature, and I was all right.
When you'd been sent to Syria, were there lots of other men who'd been sent there with similar sort of medical problems?
Well, there's wounded soldiers there. It was quite a big hospital in the hills in Syria. Again, the usual check-up when we went from the hospital into a transit camp next door. And there they check on your TAB and all the rest of it, your inoculations, and they found out that I was due for a TAB, They gave me one. What happened? My arm came up like a bloody great balloon. Reactions to the whatever I'd had. And the, so I was in there for another week. All that went down. And that's where I met that chap who shot the... Unfortunately, shot the broken tooth. But,
had he been removed there because he'd become mentally imbalanced by the incident?
Yeah.
So was there a facility for psychological treatment there?
There must have been. Well, this was a transit camp, see, so he must have been in the hospital to get into the transit camp. Because I don't think there was any other hospitals in that area except for that one that took the people down into the transit camp. Then you were forwarded on to, back to your unit.
How had it affected him? Were there any signs of his illness?
When I saw him, he didn't seem too bad. And he actually conned me into giving him a sub. So he couldn't have been too bad. But going on from there, I myself was transferred down to another transit camp in Beirut itself, and the usual procedure was you reported in. I've been a sergeant. The first thing I got detailed was main gate guard commander for that night, and in the afternoon we had to report, and rifles were issued and ammunition, because I don't know if you know, but the locals could get into the camp and they'd pinch your blankets from underneath you. I don't know if you know. They'd make you turn over and they'd roll the blanket up and you'd roll back and they'd whip the blanket from underneath you. As easy as that. But we had... I wasn't main gate guard commander. I was guard commander of the people who were doing the patrol in the area. And I had 16 men of all descriptions from all the different regiments, And I just have two men walking the perimeter all night. I had a corporal with me, and during the night we split up. But during the night, there was a shot rang out, and nobody seemed to know where it came from. In the morning, the main gate commander, I think it was the main gate commander, guard commander, said one of his men was missing. And it turned out this bloke had committed suicide. He shot himself through the mill. But it was between the latrines and the barbed wire surrounding the camp. And they said that my patrol should have found him before. The shot was, say, 3 o'clock, and they found him at 5, whatever. After a lot of interviewing and whatever, they found out that they had patrols, being dark, they came in front of the latrines, so they didn't actually go behind. But that was unfortunate, really. Because they questioned all my men, and they thought it was one of them. The shot came from one of my men, but it never. And funny enough, I nearly missed rejoining my unit at that particular time because they were holding a court of inquiry as to why it happened and how it happened. And I had to give evidence as to how many men I had and all the rest of it. But it's a thing I didn't really want after coming out of the hospital. But these accidents do happen.
And that was at the transit camp at Beirut?
Yeah.
Did you go into Beirut at that time?
Yes. We went 2 or 3 times. And I used to get on the bus and we used to say, British Army of Pay. We got free rides on the bus anyway, down into Beirut. But it was nothing startling, you know, it's typical Arab town. And then from there, I went all down through Jordan and was going to join my battalion, who came out from Alamein, and they were in the process of being transferred to Iraq, and I just managed to catch them, to join them, to go back through Jordan. Now, we travelled by lorry through Jordan, out through into Iraq anyway, and we were eventually we finished up 10 or 12 miles from Baghdad, and we were there for 3 months, I suppose, and eventually we went down to Basra, caught a boat to India.
In that time when you were in Iraq, were you reforming? Because did the battalion get a number of casualties during the Al Alamein period?
Oh, yes. The Al Alamein, they lost quite a lot of men. I've read the book since, and my own company, they said they had 50% casualties. And D Company, I think, had another lot of casualties. Reading the book, they had quite a nasty time.
So what were you involved in? Were you involved again with the training and the...
Well, in Iraq, we just done normal training. I can't remember really what... I think at the time they were frightened of the Russian... the Germans coming in through the back door sort of thing. I think the Russians holding up at Stalingrad stopped them from coming through that way, so we were only there as a stopgap in case they came through the back door, the Germans, and then we moved on to India. And there, in the meantime, we transferred from the 44th Home Counties, which we were in, into the 5th Indian Division, and that's where we joined up really. In our brigade, we had the 1st Punjabis and the 4th Central Rajputs. And on the whole, we got on very well together.
So with these brigades, were there two Indian battalions and one British battalion?
Yeah. And I think the Sussex were in one of the other brigades. But no, it was one in British battalion and two in Indians, yeah. And at Basra, it was really hot. We got on the boat to India and Bombay. No, yeah, Bombay. We went to Bombay. And then from there, we were on a train out to into the country where we really started training.
What had your initial impressions of India been when you'd arrived in Bombay?
Not very good. I mean, I hadn't read or anything about India, but the culture of India isn't more or less what it is now. I mean, I think the cow is a sacred, and bullock carts and what have you, and the street, the old tram cars and that, you know, it's... nothing like England or the European countries at all. But we were out, I can't remember the name of the place, but we actually finished up in an open space, nothing but tents. There's nothing else there at all. And we were reorganised there. We'd done a bit of training, but we'd still got our uniform from the desert. We were still in shorts and what, which was okay because it was running hot now. And I remember we were sent up into the hills there to do a bit of jungle training and coming back. And at the time, when you got monsoon rain and that. It was nothing to everybody strip off, go outside and have a good old wash and what have you. Because there's nobody else about. It's one way of keeping clean. Another instance, it was storming that day, and we went out to have the usual strip off, and one of the chaps went out with just a cross, a gold cross and chain on his neck, and it was struck by lightning and it knocked him out, and fortunately our stretcher bearers were on hand and brought him round. But on another occasion we had to go in and you hold your, with the wind, you hold your tent poles to stop them from blowing away, and the water has seeped down the pole and you get this electric shock and then go down the pole. But it was all in the course of living there, I suppose. Little things that happen.
When did you arrive roughly in India? Was it late 42 or early 43?
Late 42, I think. Yeah. I'm not certain about that thing.
So, you mentioned that you did jungle training.
Mm.
That must have been vastly different from what you'd done before.
Oh, yeah, it was. And we'd go up into the hills, and with the rain and that, I mean, we had to deal with a lot of water, you know, running down and that. And we got wet in training and that. And we used to use our ground sheets as bivouacs, you know, two of you get together, strip them together and make a little tent. But it was certainly gave us an insight as to what was to come later on.